Brothers and sisters, now this is a gospel for a retreat, okay? You know, it's beautiful. They come and they tell Jesus, and he says, come by yourselves to a deserted place and rest. And that's, now that sounds like a retreat, right? But even with that, you may experience this certainly on just a weekend. All right, you get to the retreat, and you have nice nights, leave nice breakfast, maybe a talk. But there's still lots of things going on inside, right? You know, there's, what am I going to do on Monday? How am I going to get that bill paid? Whatever, you know, all those things. So Jesus then calls them even to a deeper place. It's very beautiful. So then all that kind of distractions were still there. Now let's get in the boat and go to a deeper place. It's a beautiful sign, or a beautiful call. It's kind of what goes on in a retreat, that we may, at that door, try to leave everything there, but it's still in here, right? But Jesus calls you then to a deeper place, huh? To really, to quiet down, to be silent, and to hear his beautiful voice. Now, I would get in trouble with Father Andrew, you know, who's Father Andrew is supposed to be here for this retreat. And you know Father Andrew's big thing, right? I mean, he's amazing. He can be, his health cannot be good, but you could ask him, Father, just tell me a little bit about Fatima. Oh, perks right up, you know? He's like the Fatima priest, right? He loves Fatima so much. As a matter of fact, he was scheduled for a retreat in November, and I had to take his place. 80-something pilgrims is the only priest, right? And I love Fatima, but I'm not Father Andrew. I didn't write books on it and things like this. And then I saw out there that a certain priest who's sitting in the sanctuary, July 5th to 14, is leading a pilgrimage for the 100th anniversary of Fatima. That'd be a nice, sounds like a nice trip to go on, Father. And I'll be there for the July apparition date. But I was able to be there in November. It's beautiful. But I would get in trouble. I'm sure Father's going to ask me when I get back, did you give a homily on Fatima? Did you talk about Fatima, right? So I better give one, okay? At least it's going to be in the ballpark here. And how I would tie it and connect it to the prophet Elijah is this. This was one of the things that brought me back to my Catholic faith was Fatima. And on October, it was the October apparition, 13, 1917, with the miracle in the sun, 70,000 people see this, right? And I said, how can all those people be crazy, you know? They all saw that miracle of the sun. If you're familiar with Fatima, that after the miracle of the sun, people thought the end of the world was going to happen. The sun was pulsating, dancing, and then they thought, this is it. They fell to their knees doing their act of contrition and everything. And then what happens is after that, there's a few things that appear in the sky. St. Joseph appears with baby Jesus. They both bless the world. And the very last apparition in the sky that happened, Our Lady of Sorrows, but the very last one was Our Lady of Mount Carmel, where Elijah, remember, he certainly had a cave that he lived up there. It's where the Carmelite order began. So if you go to your Carmelite sisters here in the diocese, they call Elijah their holy father, Elijah. That's their holy father. In a way, he's the founder of the Carmelite order. Well, it's because he was on Mount Carmel, and which we'll talk about tonight, he had a certain showdown with some people on Mount Carmel. But I don't want to get ahead of myself, all right? But that's where crusaders, after they were in the early 1200s, maybe late 1100s, crusaders on their way back from really being defeated by the Turks, to the Muslims, Saracens, some of them just decided to stay on the top of Mount Carmel. It's the most beautiful place in the Holy Land, people say. And Carmel means garden. And they stayed there as hermits and then became, you know, that beautiful Carmelite order that we have. And they consider, of course, Our Lady as their patroness, Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And she appeared. That was the final thing that all these people saw in the sky. It was Our Lady dressed, Our Lady of Mount Carmel. I think she had the scapular, and she was holding the baby Jesus. So we have a little connection to Fatima, Father Andrew, all right? When I went in November, and I was standing in there in the piazza and just wondering, wow, what that must have been like. you know, the miracle of the sun, people seeing this and that. It's a very, very special place if you haven't been there. It's a very, very holy place, a place of prayer. I was really moved by, you know, that one of the authenticating things that we have in the church, you could say of private revelation, which Fatima is, but also this, the beauty of our faith is what? Saints. That is the greatest, if you will, authenticating the litmus test that this thing works. Our Catholic faith works, the Blessed Sacrament, the St. Francis, the St. Teresa of Avila, St. Benedict, these giants that have come down to us. Well, what was so much the authenticating thing for me for Fatima, yeah, it was 70,000 people, but it was the lives of the children. I just got done reading a book on Lucia. It was really powerful. And the lives of Jacinta, Francisco's little children, you know, 7 years old. When Our Lady said to, when she said to the three kids, you know, unless Russia's converted to my Immaculate Heart, they thought it was some girl in the town that they didn't know about, you know? Who's Russia, right? They're just simple kids. They're peasant kids, right? They didn't have a doctorate from Harvard or anything, and Our Lady's telling them all this stuff, you know, the war's going to end unless, you know, people convert, there's going to be a worse war, and then Russia's going to spread her errors and all these things, you know? Well, what impressed me so much is that, two spirits, two kind of movements happened in Francisco and Jacinta. Lucia was she knew her role was in a way to propagate the message of Fatima, but Jacinta and Francisco approached the rest of their short lives on earth. They approached that in two different ways. Jacinta was very struck. Blessed Jacinta, who I hear is they're going to be canonized on May 13th. At least that's what I've heard, at least. But Jacinta, for the rest of her short life, she was so moved at the plight of poor sinners and the thought that they could be lost for eternity, she began to do these incredible penances and sacrifice. Matter of fact, all the children, they wore a string around their waist, you know. They began to give up meals and things and fast just to make sacrifices, because Our Lady said to them in the August apparition, many souls are lost because no one makes sacrifices for them and prays for them. So she heard that, and that's her mission the rest of her short life. She just was one perfect holocaust, offering everything for poor sinners. But Francisco had a different kind of movement, in a way, happened to him. He approached the rest of his short life. They both died of the Spanish influenza not too long after the apparitions. But all that he wanted to do is he heard Our Lady say that God is offended, saddened by the sins of humanity. You know, I don't know if you ever had this when you were a child, and you saw maybe your mother was sad for a reason. It can moves you, doesn't it? That you wanted to console your mom in some way, right? Even interestingly, within the animal kingdom, they can sense when people are sad, right? It's an amazing thing. Dogs can do that, cats, and they can bring in a way sometimes this a consolation to us. Well, Francisco was so struck with the idea that God was saddened and angry, but hurt that his children were turning away from him, similar to Elijah, right, in his time, that all he wanted to do for the rest of his life was console the heart of Christ, of the Father, the Holy Spirit. Even doesn't St. Paul say, do nothing that will sadden the Holy Spirit? You know, we have a loving God, and for him to be sad, certainly by our own sins, right? But that should move us to a further place in our life, a further place of conversion. And I was struck by those two attitudes that, yeah, you know, I've seen people within the church that they have Jacinta's kind of attitude. They make incredible sacrifices within their family, for their children, whatever it may be, so that sinners may be converted. And then you have other people, maybe a more contemplative side, maybe our Carmelite sisters here, nuns within the diocese, that really focus maybe on the second one, consoling the heart. Those two really struck me in the lives of those two little children, 7, 8 years old. I said, Father Anthony, I'm 46. What am I doing with my life? You know, they got it right at 7, 8 years old. It's absolutely amazing. But I offer that to you for your own reflection, because I wonder if you might tend towards one or the other. I know I tend towards Francisco, his kind of, you hate to see God sad, you know, and you want to do something that pleases him and consoles him, right? But I'd like to tell you, just finish this homily with a story. Maybe it's more in the vein of Jacinta's life. It's a true story. I like to tell stories, you know, just to illustrate points. But this story happened a couple years ago. I've been doing a number of things in Memphis, Tennessee, number of missions throughout the years. Got to know a lot of the people down there, really nice people in the South, good Catholics. And one of my friends, he's actually the top lawyer in the United States in defending people on death row. And he's the lawyer for The Green Mile. Anybody ever saw that movie with Tom Hanks, right? Was it Tom Hanks? Yeah, it was Tom Hanks, right? The Green Mile. Why they call it The Mile? Well, it was this walkway to the electric chair. It was maybe 150 yards, but it felt like a mile when you were on it, right? So they called it The Green Mile. And my friend is a lawyer for The Green Mile. They've moved out of that particular building. Really, it was a shambles into another building, but they still call it The Green Mile, all right? One day, he took me as his legal consultant because as a chaplain, I couldn't go in. They have their own chaplain. So I was his legal representative for the guys on death row. So I got to meet some interesting characters, another homily, though, who are on death row. But there was a man on death row before I got there. He had hence died. And he was the worst guy on death row. And he committed a terrible crime. And my friend's a very devout Catholic, Order of Malta. He said, if there's a poster child for someone possessed, it's this guy. As a matter of fact, in the courtroom, he had committed a terrible crime against a woman. The judge asked him why he did this, and he says, because Satan told me to. And my lawyer friend, in some of the interviews, he detected, like, there's different voices and things going on inside of this guy. You know, he said it was kind of scary at times. And anyway. And the guy, it's funny, he hated Republicans, right? So he tried to kill his former lawyer because he was a Republican. So the guard said, whatever you do, don't tell him you're a Republican, right? So my friend goes in there, and the guy, the first question, are you Republican? He says, no, I'm Catholic. And so the guy didn't know what to do, you know? He's like, oh, okay, I guess that's okay, right? So, right, so he meets with him, you know, once a month, and basically what my friend tries to do is just delay the process, delay everything to give the guys as much time on death row as possible. So at any rate, my friend, Robert, he's the lawyer, he had another friend from Memphis who became a priest. And when you become a priest, Father Coulter and myself, and Brother Angelus next year, Brother Angelus will come back to Lincoln as Father Angelus. And he'll have Father Innocent with him as well. And they'll have a big party. Everybody will come, right? Well, similar to my friend Robert's friend, he was part of a religious order in Europe, but he came back to Memphis, just ordained, big party, right? And he brought with him some of his religious order. So many of you may have seen some of the friars. Father Angelus will bring a lot of us back with him for the party, I hope, if we all behave ourselves. Okay, have a nice Lincoln hospitality. So this whole order comes over, and one of the order, there's a nun named Sister Michaela, short little thing. And she found out that my friend Robert is the lawyer for The Green Mile. She must have seen the movie. All right, so Sister Michaela's from Austria. And so she immediately, they get off the plane, you know, and they're going to have the Mass of Thanksgiving, the big party, barbecue. They love their barbecue in Tennessee, you know. And she says, Robert, I want to go to death row. Says it with a nice German-Austrian accent. He said, sister, you know, Memphis to Nashville is like 3 hours. And we're having a Mass of Thanksgiving, having a party, you know, like, it's a long day. It's a whole day, you know, to get in there. Plus, there's no way you're going to get permission to get into the, you know, because like I said, they don't allow anybody. You have to be a lawyer to get in there, or your legal. This is my legal clothes, you know. She says, well, I'll tell you, could you call the warden and just ask him? And if he says no, then I'll take that as God's will. He's thinking, there's no way this anti-Catholic Baptist, Southern Baptist warden is going to let a nun into the Green Mile. So at any rate, he says, okay. So he calls up and he says, for the first time in 15 years, the warden answered his phone. Usually it's his secretary. So he says, warden, yes, this is Robert Hutton. And he says, hi, Robert, how you doing? He says, yeah, I have this nun here. So he was trying to make it as worse as it could be so the warden would say no. So he didn't want to go. So he says, warden, I have this nun here. She's from Austria, you know, and she wants to come visit the inmates on death row on the Green Mile. He says, I told her, you know, this is just not, it's not going to work out, you know. He says, why don't you bring her by? He's like, oh, I'm stuck. So he gets off the phone and she's looking at him, you know, and he says, well, I guess we can go tomorrow and we can get back in time for the party tomorrow night and then the next day, but it's an all day. Are you sure you want to go, sister? Yes, I want to go. So they get in the car the next day. There they drive 3 hours from Memphis to Nashville, a long, boring drive, just straight. I've been on it. And they finally get to the Green Mile, and they're getting out of the car. And who's getting out of his car at the same time? First time in 15 years, my friend Robert's seen this, is the warden. So he says, I can't believe the warden. He usually has his own private parking. He's getting out in this parking lot. So Sister Michaela jumps out of the car, basically before he stops the car, and runs up to the warden. And my friend Robert's like trying to park the car to get a hold of this crazy nun, right? And she goes up, warden, warden. And he's like, saw the nun for the first time. And she says, I'm Sister Michaela. I'm here. And then Robert runs up and says, I'm sorry, warden. This is the nun I was telling you about. You know, he says, well, that's okay, you know. And she says, warden, I wonder if it's okay, could I give out these pictures of the Divine Mercy, or the Divine Mercy of Jesus? Can I give these pictures of Jesus to the inmates? Now, on the agreement, you can't give anything to anyone. No one gets, you know, because they just make a general blanket rule. You can't get anything in there, right, to anyone. So he looks at her and he's like, okay, okay, a picture of Jesus. Like, my friend Robert can't believe this. First of all, he answers his phone. Then he says yes to this nun. Now she can get these pictures of Jesus in there, right? So they get on death row, you know, and they're meeting this guy, this person, that person. And the guy that I told you about, Sedley Alley, horrible criminal, possessed. He comes in, and Sister Michaela sees him, and she starts letting him have it. You know, as nuns can do, right? Those of you in a Catholic school, right? Oh, you got to, because he was using foul language. She could hear him down the hall using bad language. You got to clean up your language. You can't be speaking like that. It offends God, you know? And he's like, he's taking it from this short little nun, right? She's letting him have it with a finger in his face. Big guy, said Lele, terrible criminal, possessed. And she's letting him have it left and right. And then she calms down, is trying to talk to him about Jesus and things like this. At any rate, so they have their visits. They go back. They have the Mass of Thanksgiving. Sister Michaela and company, they go back to Austria, go back to Europe, right? Big thing, big, great thing. A couple months later, Robert gets a call from Sedley Alley on the Green Mile. And this was shortly before he was going to be put to death later that year. And it was, I think it was a week or two after Easter. And he says, Robert, this is Sedley. Says, Sedley, oh, how are you doing? He says, good. I just want you to know something. I was baptized on the Easter Vigil. And Robert's like, you were baptized? What do you mean you were baptized? He says, no, I was baptized. So he says, I'm going to come over there tomorrow. We'll talk all about it. So my friend Robert drives the next day, has the meeting with Sedley Alley. He says, yeah, I was baptized. He said, I can't believe it. This is amazing, right? And Robert had been praying for him. He says, well, let me ask the warden. Maybe I can get a cross or a crucifix, picture of Mary into you. You know, he says, no, no. It's okay, Robert. I have this. And he took out of his shirt pocket what? the divine mercy image that Sister Michaela had given to him. So my friend Robert's like, where did you get that? Yeah, Sister Michaela gave that to me, this divine. And if you remember in the diary, St. Faustina attaches great graces to those who just even look upon that image, images for conversion. So he's like, Robert's like, I can't believe this. So anyway, he drives back, right, immediately gets on the phone over to Europe to his priest friend from Memphis. He says, do you have Sister Michaela's phone number? I got to talk to her, right? This is the most incredible thing. You know, we went to that death row, you remember that? And this guy got baptized. And his priest friend said, didn't you hear what happened? He says, no. He said, Sister Michaela was struck down blind and she was paralyzed on Good Friday before Easter. So he says, that's incredible. So he finally is able to track her down. I think she was in Italy at the time. And they put the phone up to her, you know, and I said, Sister Michaela, what happened? She says, well, you know, I had been praying and praying, and I felt inspired to offer my life for the conversion of those on death row. You know, and so she did that on Good Friday. He was baptized on the Easter Vigil. Just amazing. Now, hence then, that was a few years ago, not too many, but Sister Michaela's had a turnaround in her health. She can now see she's back up. She's been back to death row to let the guys have it, you know. She's greatly loved on death row by the guys. It's a powerful story for me that she was like Jacinta. You know, that oftentimes we'd like our kids, I'd like my atheist brother or our parish priest, we'd like them to get zapped with electricity, right? Of God, you know, why just you don't convert them, Lord? And yet, I wonder what is the cost that we're willing to pay for them. Do you remember the story of St. John Vianney, the Curie of Ars? One of the neighboring priests came to him and was bellyaching about all his people. They're lazy, they don't come to church, they don't do the responses, yada, yada, yada. And St. John Vianney said to him, how often do you make vigils and fasts and sacrifices for your people? And that just like closed his lips, just like that, right? His sisters, you know, Elijah, Jacinta, Sister Michaela, they're great inspirations for us. To offer our lives, you know. Now, I'm not offering my life to be struck down, you know, paralyzed, all right? But nonetheless, to offer our lives more and more for God, for the church, for conversion of sinners, to console the heart of God. These are what the saints did. And it comes with a great cost to us as well, but with also a great joy that we see others embrace Jesus and embrace Blessed Mother and embrace the Holy Church. So we pray for that inspiration for ourselves so we can get to that heroic point of just without compromise to offer our lives freely to the Lord for his purposes, his glory, and for his church. Amen.